Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On this week's program, we'll hear from the executive director and co-founder of the Midwest Hemp Council, Jamie Campbell-Petty, and get some very important information regarding the 2020 hemp growing season in Indiana. We'll also get some of the new requirements you may not be aware of and where you can get more information if you need it. Jamie, it's been a while since we've had you on, but the purpose of our show today is to give a basic overview of where we are in Indiana with fiber, grain, CBD, and where we might be headed. So it's great to have you back on the program, Jamie, and it's been a while.
Hi, Jason. I know, along with many of the others, we've been all over the Midwest enjoying conference season, networking, and building relationships.
Kind of give us just a real quick overview on what you're doing right now, specifically your position, your role, what kind of day-to-day things are you doing for the Hemp Council, as well as just hemp in general?
Well, Jason, thanks. Primarily overseeing the functions, the administrative functions of the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as building that out and building out our platform. We have some significant changes that will be unfolding over the next month or so with a membership platform, membership-based software platform. And one of the things that I really want to touch upon are we are expanding our committees. We've talked about this before, but we're really asking for people, especially in our surrounding states, to reach out to me at jamiemidwesthempcouncil.net. We already have some members at each committee table, but we want to make sure each state of membership is represented. And those committees are membership, communications, grain, fiber, cannabinoid, and we really would love to have our members participate. This is a great way to not only have a voice, but to take a leadership, a driver's seat position, if you will, with a very minimal time commitment.
And again, so if somebody's out there listening, sorry to interrupt you there, Jamie, if somebody's out there listening right now, they're like, yeah, I'd like to get involved, but you know, who would I contact? How would I do that? And what would I be doing? And am I overcommitting on my time here?
Exactly. And it's really with these committees, our goal is an hour or two a month is really what we're talking about. We do want a director for each committee. For example, Jessica Scott is the director of the Animal Feed, Midwest Hemp Council Animal Feed Committee, focused on research for animal feed so we can get that into commerce. Austin Rodas is the director of the membership committee. Greg Kruger is director of the cannabinoid committee. And then we have numerous folks that have stepped up to support them and participate, but we need more of you. Oh, excuse me. Marty Mahan will be in ahead of the director for the feed and grain. Again, this is based upon our response to date and those who have put forth, you know, a desire to participate, but we're really reaching out. Rachel Berry from Illinois is engaged on the membership committee. So, and Dave Craybill and Blaine Bechtold in Michigan. So we're just asking other states, come to the table with us. Let's make sure that we're all communicating and working together. So that's, you know, that's from an administrative side. That's just kind of where we are. We're using the website to communicate as effectively as we can regarding events, regarding news on the federal level, regarding each state. And a big part of my job the last few months has been traveling around the Midwest and going to the different conferences, meeting the different leaders, expanding my education through attending these conferences and bringing that back to our team members.
And if I want to go out and volunteer, and again, I'm thinking about this, obviously, if somebody's listening to the podcast, they do have an interest, and they're like, wow, how can I get involved? Again, you're talking about as little as maybe an hour a month that they can help out, but do they, you know, how much do they really need to know about hemp to get involved? Is that something where there is a learning curve once they get in, or do they already need to know, you know, everything that there is to know about hemp before they volunteer?
No, we encourage anyone who wants to participate. We will talk with you, see what your best fit is. It's not a large time commitment. Just sometimes we have several people who just show up when they can and take tickets at the door if we're having an event, that type of thing. There's always a place for someone to assist. And in the meantime, we want it to be mutually beneficial so that you're perhaps helping us staff an event that will then therefore introduce you to members of the industry and perhaps gain education.
All right. Now, Jamie, let's move on and talk about the let's go to the agriculture side of things here for a moment. Right now, we're in the middle of March. When does the planting season start, and what should farmers that want to plant hemp this year, what should they be doing right now?
So, Jason, farmers or growers who are planning to grow for 2020 should either have already submitted for applied for their license, or they should do so soon. You can do that by going to oisc.purdue.edu. That's the Office of the Indiana State Chemist. And there is a hemp tab there, and everything you would want to know about getting licensed and how to prepare is there. And so that you know, to receive your license, the basic requirements are going to be having a research proposal and a researcher who has approved that proposal. And then you will need to list your seed source, the location of your grow, and you'll have to provide your driver's license so that you can be submitted to a background check. We are currently at around 200 approved licenses, maybe a little more, and 300 is the cutoff. So we're more than halfway there.
Didn't they limit the cutoff last year to 100?
They did. And this year they're going to allow for 300.
Okay, fantastic. Now, Jamie, honestly, at this point, if someone has not started preparing to plant hemp for this year, are they going to realistically have time to be able to do that and do it properly and still have a decent crop this year?
They can. However, the caveat to that is that if they have previous experience in education, and if they have already started or have knowledge of their supply chain, the industry is still new. We're still birthing this industry. So the import of networking and participation and education cannot be overstated. And that's from seed to shelf. We were just down at the National Hemp Expo a couple weeks ago. Our team, many of our members were there, and the sole purpose was that of other conferences, to build that supply chain. Make sure that you're looking at the person from whom you're going to source your seed or clones, whether it's for seed for fiber or grain, whether it's seed or clones for cannabinoid. Know exactly what you're getting, know who you're getting it from, make sure that's locked in. And if you haven't done that yet, you have a very short window in which to accomplish that.
So it'd be more realistic. Also, it'd be more realistic to spend this year looking at what others are doing and getting that information, gathering that information for next year would be a more realistic view for somebody just stepping into the arena right now.
Absolutely. I'm taking probably 10 to 12 calls a week of people who want to grow this year. If you go to the OISC's website, in fact, they have it's 10 questions. I'm trying to find it as we speak. But if you go to their website and their Hemp League, they have a document, 10 questions to ask yourself. And I support that because, you know, do you know your seed source already? Do you know your processor? Do you know your market? Do you have any sort of a business plan? Do you know what you can afford to lose? If you have not considered all of these types of questions and you can't answer them knowledgeably, then it's okay to sit, you know, take a seat on the bench is what I tell people. Watch the game, watch the grow, and participate in any opportunity for education, visit fields this summer. It's, you know, you're not going to miss out on the industry just by not participating this year.
And a great way to participate is to volunteer and get involved, because you can't help but soak up that knowledge if you are at an event and you're working a table or you're handing out flyers or buttons or taking money at the door or whatever. You're going to be in that community and you're going to have that opportunity to have those casual conversations where you pick up a lot of that information.
Yes, I go back, and a lot of people have heard me say this, that I go back to the 2019 season, And we can draw a line through those who grew and those who can measure their experience as successful, which is measured differently by everyone. It doesn't necessarily mean financial, but those that were successful are those who engaged. They either attended boot camps, networking events, they were engaged online. The hemp industry is very heavily engaged in Facebook, for better or for worse. It is a good place to track what's happening. Newsletters, our website. I've talked to members just in the last few days that haven't gone to the website lately and didn't know about the events that we have posted. It takes a second to hit up our website to see what events are happening on if you don't use social media. Also, our monthly podcast, or excuse me, our weekly podcast.
We're here every week.
Yes. All of these things are resources, and there are other entities providing them. So I encourage people just, you know, get involved. This is a new industry. You have to be able to vet. One of the issues we're having, we have people who entered into agreements, verbal agreements last year, not contracts, and now those verbal agreements have fallen through and they want us to help them. Well, it's difficult to help if you don't have a written contract. We, you know, an attorney or an economic development person, we can't get involved if there's not a written contract. So all of these things, all of these nuances that go with any business or with any new industry are hypercritical with the hemp industry.
Now, Jamie, let's get a little more specific here and break down the types of hemp production we're talking about. Of course, we have the fiber and grain struggles out there, but we also have the CBD industry. Tell us the difference between the two as far as which one's easier to get involved with, which one may be more profitable, how that is kind of shaking out, if that's even possible to answer that sort of question.
It is difficult because the entire industry is, you know, it's a birthing. It's new. The thing that kind of keeps me going is when I talk to my friends that are in their mid to late 80s and they can inform me and give me examples of how the soybean industry unfolded. So that gives me hope because that's really what we're doing here. It's very comparable to this. But let's start with grain and fiber, which is all I knew about when I began advocating in 2014. And most of our team got involved only because of grain and fiber as a row crop, as a diversified source of income for our farmers. We didn't know about cannabinoids at that point. So the grain industry of the three has proven to be the most slow and steady. And the people involved in that industry, especially in my opinion, Chad Rosen of Victory Hemp and Ken Anderson and his team at Legacy Hemp, those two have really set a good standard in what we call slow and steady and not growing too fast and trying to make sure and read the market and therefore not overpromising anything to the farmers. So I think the grain industry is a very, it's a good example of how we would have liked to seen the rest of the industry grow and hope that the grain will continue to stay that course.
Jamie, if I can interrupt there, what is the end result of the fiber and grain crops? Where do those go? Where do those get sold to, or who do those get sold to?
So for the grain, that is a nutritional, that's for nutrition. You can buy our local Indiana sources, Foods Alive, Victory Hemp Foods, and even Legacy has a supply chain. So that is the hemp seed, whether it's toasted or it's the hemp oil. Mark Boyer up in Converse, Indiana, cold presses his own, the Healthy Hoosier Oil. So those are a nutritional, human nutrition. The result, though, from that is a cake. After the hemp seed is cold pressed, there's a hemp cake. We're now looking at that for animal feed. So the grain industry is an expanding market, but again, it has been handled properly, I believe, by a slow and steady growth. For fiber, it's been quite bumpy. We believe that I consider that the long game. Many of us do. We believe that with our world looking at more plant-based materials, that the hemp fiber has a strong future there, whether it's clothing, whether it's automobile components, paper replacements. However, our supply chain is still sort of discombobulated. So we don't have the right genetics being grown in the right situation and being processed appropriately to be sent to market.
So when we have, so when we hear about somebody like, or when we read that, that say Lego, for instance, is wanting to start using hemp fiber for their products, where would they get that hemp fiber? Who would they buy that from? And I assume, am I correct in assuming that's where fiber would go? That's, that would be an example of that?
There's also some argument. I'm not a hemp plastic expert, so I hate to go down this path too far. But there's also some byproducts from this CBD extraction that that can be used in that process. But we're getting there. We already have, you know, hemp that has been in automobile components and will likely return to automobile components. There's a hemp wood factory in Kentucky who I'm that I'm really excited about, and they're making hardwood flooring. We've got hempcrete. So it's there. It's just that the supply chain has not been finessed. We don't have, we've had people go too big. We've had people overcommit. We've even had farmers who overproduced. We just have growing pains within that fiber industry. But I do believe grain and fiber are well on their way to a strong future. It's just going to take a while. And again, that's why we keep telling people, you know, slow and steady communication. And it is still really research because we do not have guaranteed genetics. This isn't corn and soybean. This isn't something that's been decades in the making that we have perfected. So we ask for patience.
And again, part of that is, and I guess just to go back to that previous question there and wrap it up. And again, I don't know if this is a question that technically can be answered in this generic fashion. But again, I used Lego as an example, but let's say for car parts or something else, where does the farmer go to sell his fiber? I mean, it's with his grain. He can just go to a co-op and store it there. Where is he going to take his hemp? And how does, you know, an auto manufacturer buy that supply? Where will that manufacturer go to buy that supply? Is there, will there be a middleman involved?
There will be, and there has to be, but you raise a very valid point. No farmer should be growing any hemp product, whether it's cannabinoid, grain or fiber, unless they have a contract for the purchase of that, or unless they acknowledge that it is grown for research and that they may not have a market. As you know, we had farmers who had contracts for fiber last year, and unfortunately that company is now gone.
Well, that can happen.
Yes. And so our farmers are sitting on fiber. However, it's you having that contract, knowing where your market is part of the process. That's part of why you grow. And I, again, I'm fielding calls all week. People want to grow hemp. Some of them can't even tell me which hemp they want to grow. They don't know the difference between cannabinoid growth, fiber grain, let alone do they have a purchaser. So I tell them, if you don't know what you're growing yet, and you definitely don't have a market that you are aware of, please don't grow. Sit tight and work with us and then help us develop that market from another way.
So these, let's jump back to, you said we had about 200 licenses right now with a cap of 300. In a perfect world, those 200 folks would already have a buyer for what they plan to grow this year. So do you think we're living in that perfect world?
No, not even close.
So what will those folks, so those folks, technically, they probably should not be growing? Or do you think that they, is there, okay, I guess, so is there an opportunity for those who don't have a contract right now? Will they have an opportunity throughout the season to get that contract or to find somebody to do that purchasing? Or are they going to be kind of left high and dry?
Definitively answer that, but I can tell you it will be difficult. What you and I haven't discussed is the cannabinoid industry. We in the past have referred to it as the CBD industry. It's really cannabinoid because we are finding more and more people are looking at CBG, CBN, I had a conversation the other day regarding multiple other cannabinoids. So we are trying to shift our language to make sure and encompass all of those, which is cannabinoid. Yes, mm-hmm. most of us are mostly familiar with CBD. That's what most of us are taking and right. using. And it's a wonderful, it is a wonderful tool for health. It sure. really is. But as I was warned at Purdue in 2014, never underestimate our ability to overproduce. And unfortunately, that is what we have done. There is definitely an overproduction of cannabinoid products. There is an overproduction of cannabinoids. Now, we all believe this is going to balance out, especially once the FDA gets involved and we are allowed to do more with the oils, the cannabidiol. But for right now, it's just difficult. So we believe many have grown too fast, mm-hmm. grown too big too fast. Mm-hmm. I've heard in the last three conferences I attended around the Midwest that we harvested enough cannabinoid plant in the U.S. in 2019 that equates to 50 bottles per U.S. citizen of CBD oil.
Wow.
Which is almost one a week.
Wow.
Now, we all know that everything harvested did not get processed, mm-hmm. whether it was based on quality or whatever. But the reality is we have to be honest about the how much we really need and when we need it. It's all timing. And again, it goes to slow and steady. And we had a lot of people. It says a lot about the state of our farming, our agriculture community, that so many ran so quickly towards the cannabinoid because they saw large dollars attached to that.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's has dropped approximately 60%. And so, but it says a lot about what's going on with agriculture, and it just reinforces why we do need hemp as a diversified income stream.
Well, and of course, there, would we assume that the other side of that equation will catch up to the growers, meaning that somebody, the side that produces, well, excuse me, produces is not a good word because the growers are actually producing the cannabinoid, but whoever they're selling that to, companies that will take that and turn that into CBD oils and products and sell those, is it just a matter of that's just a little behind right now and they will catch up? Or yeah, and with that, will there be the problem of too many of those type of companies? Or do you see a balance of the farmers growing enough to provide for the supply needed, the demand versus overproducing?
In my personal opinion, and this is my personal opinion, I believe that we have allowed farmers to overproduce for cannabinoids, but I also believe that we have excessive infrastructure, mm-hmm. not just in Indiana, but throughout the Midwest. I want to believe that it will mature quickly in the next couple of years and that this will all balance out. The supply chain will work itself out and that the demand, the market demand will increase and the processors will mature in their methods and in what they're producing. And that therefore that will translate back to the growers. But right now it's just very difficult. It's very disjointed and imbalanced. A perfect scenario really is that we determine what genetics we need to achieve what end product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you step back and look at it, you do have to look at the positive side of things in that people are using CBD and they do see a benefit in it and it is growing. And it's only been within a year or two that it's even been available to the point of the way the public is consuming it. So that certainly bodes well for the industry and that so many people are interested in purchasing it. You've got fly-by-night companies out there, but you're going to have that in any industry. But again, it's a good sign that people are taking to the product.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt. And I think as we proceed down the path with CBG, with CBN, and then, of course, then add in terpenes, I think we have a lot to learn. And I think we have a lot of good tools in front of us. Again, I keep saying slow and steady. Mm-hmm. Because anything going too big and too fast, it gets lost and gets diluted. And I just feel that that's kind of where we are right now. And so we need a year or two to settle down. But again, it is a birthing industry. It's painful. And we'll get through this and hopefully see a benefit for, you know, decades to come.
And again, education is the key. So we do encourage people to hit the website. And again, all over the country, there are programs, there are opportunities to get that education, regardless of where you are. Jamie, the final thing I wanted to hit on here with you, we haven't had you on for a while. So I did want to get an update from you on the USDA status, the 1% movement. What's your view on that, your opinion, and where is that at the moment?
Regarding the 1%, we actually stand and support this, and we believe that this is gaining much more support as people become educated. They understand that raising this to 1% does nothing for the psychoactivity level, that this is simply to support our farmers, giving our farmers a little bit of leeway, especially for states like Indiana that are looking at total THC. So to get the cannabinoid quality that they want, the THC may go up a little bit. So let's give them that 1%. There's two groups in Kentucky, farmer groups that are really leading the charge on this for those farmers. And we continue to work with our congressional members here in Indiana and the surrounding states. And we ask everyone to do that. Don't stop. Continue to educate them. And we have had it proven that the USDA is listening. Now, they cannot change this on their own, but there's no reason to not continue alerting people that this is what you want to see. And Midwest Hemp Council will be doing the same on and for our members.
There we go. And as we've discussed before, the way to educate the legislatures is to actually educate them, not yell at them. They're just human beings. They don't know everything. Now, they may want you to think they do, but they don't know everything. And they do rely on public input and information. So just give them that information and assume they don't know it. Don't assume they do know it and are just going against you.
That, Jason, you hit on something so valuable that I'm speaking a lot about in regards to, frankly, all things cannabis lately, is just, even if they are against you, take the time to speak with them and find out why, because there are education gaps. Some of us that are immersed in the hemp industry assume that others know what we know. Mm-hmm. Don't assume that. Take the time to try and talk to them. Some of them might shut the door on you. Others will listen. I'm telling you, I have way more that have listened to us than have shut the door on us. So, take them out and maybe introduce them if you need to. If you're not a farmer, introduce them to a farmer. Better yet, take a farmer with you to explain the value of these tweaks that we need, like this 1%.
Well, and there's also strength in numbers and just the fact that you do contact them, let them know you're interested, let them know that you do feel strongly about a topic without being irrational with them. It lets them know that there is a group of people that they do need to pay attention to, and it's not just a very small group. So that's the reason you want to get involved. Don't let somebody else speak for you. There needs to be two voices, not just one voice, so to speak.
Yes, that's true, because when you sit down and talk with industry members and industry leaders right now, it is very frustrating. It's part of the reason we formed Midwest Hemp Council, which is that on federal level, state level, the agencies, the regulators are disjointed. We don't have continuity. In fact, yesterday an article came out where the USDA was pointing fingers at the DEA for the stringent components in their regulations. So what does that tell you? So you have an agency pointing fingers at another agency that really shouldn't have even been involved. And then when you come down on the state level, you have, we are realistically concerned as why the FDA hasn't been more progressive and more involved. They've acknowledged that cannabinoids aren't going anywhere, that they are beneficial, but yet they have not taken a proactive approach. And all of this does is contribute to the confusion and the inability to build out a smooth supply chain from start to finish.
There we go. Jamie Campbell Petty, Executive Director and Founder of the Midwest Hemp Council. Jamie, a fantastic conversation. I was really hoping we'd have an opportunity here to just lay some basic information out and give people a chance to kind of catch up and hear what's going on. And you did a fabulous job of giving that information. So I really do appreciate you being on the program.
Well, Jason, thanks. And thanks for always hosting all of our thanks Jason and thanks for always hosting people who will come. It's been our goal all along, and you have made this clear to provide information. We don't want to go down the path of advertisement and infomercial. We really understand the value of time, and we appreciate you always leading our listeners down an efficient path for education. I do want to take the opportunity to just encourage everyone, as you do, to always visit our website, just, you know, once or twice a day. Jump over there, because that's where you're going to find information on events that are pending, updates both on a federal and state level. And if you are on social media, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, both very active to connect you. And, you know, reach out. Don't hesitate to reach out. Our team members are here to assist, but I just can't encourage you enough to get involved in a way that suits you and fits you, but don't discard the opportunity for education and information that exists, whether it's Purdue Extension, whether it's Office of the Indiana State Chemist, Midwest Hemp Council. It's valuable, and we all want to see everyone succeed. We want this industry to succeed, and we want to survive these hurdles together.
Well, spring's in the air. The warm weather is coming. It's a great time to get out, get involved, and do something that is worthwhile. So hemp right now, a great opportunity to get involved, an exciting kind of an exciting industry. It's something new and something you can learn about, something you can know about that somebody else doesn't, and be able to spread that information. And just a great time to get involved in the industry. All right, Jamie, we appreciate it. We'll go ahead and cut things off for this week, unless there's anything else we need to get to.
Nope, that's great, Jason. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care.
And that will do it for this week's show. Thanks to Jamie for coming on and giving us all that information. And thanks to you for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.